True Crime Texarkana is brought to you by J.E. Bonding, Texarkana, Arkansas's premier bail bond company. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, J.E. Bonding can handle all your bail bond needs. Agent Mark Luckett will provide you with fast, courteous service and do his best to help you through a trying time. Mark has all the experience you need to make the best of a sad situation. That's why he likes to say, two tears in the bucket, call Mark Luckett. Call him at 903-748-1402 or visit J.E. Bonding at 2315 East Street near the Miller County Sheriff's Office and Detention Center. That's 903-748-1402. 1402. It's been more than 40 years since their father found siblings Karen and Gordon Alexander brutally attacked in their Texarkana, Arkansas home. 13-year-old Gordon, dead on the scene, was found in a pool of blood. Karen, 14, spent 3 days in the intensive care unit at St. Michael's Hospital before dying of brain injuries. The case has never been solved. But now, those who never forgot the horrifying crime, including a retired police captain, have new hope that justice can finally be served. This is True Crime Texarkana. The Alexander Children Murders. Reporter Mallory Wyatt continues her look at the case.
Something peculiar about the Alexander case is how many people chose to spread lies throughout its history. Two people confessed the murders. One, a person with mental health problems. The other, a man who was drunk and bragging about committing the atrocities. Around the same time, a different man and a separate group of people known in town as the Lying Teens gave false information about the crime. The information specifically was about the truck that was around the house at the time of the murders. For those interested in justice for Karen and Gordon, this has led to uncertainty as to whether this truck was ever really part of the equation. Other rumors concerned a man who had allegedly talked to Karen at the local laundromat in the days leading up to the attack. The man reportedly had a distinct outfit, a brown Western hat, and black and white snakeskin cowboy boots. He was about 6 feet to 6 foot 3 inches tall, with a slender build, shoulder-length brown hair, and a prominent nose. The man has never been confirmed as a suspect, just a person of interest. I'm also skeptical of the information obtained about him, especially since the reported witness spoke under hypnosis and polygraph examination. All of those falsehoods and red herrings were bad enough, but perhaps the most damaging came from a person who made a name for himself by latching onto Karen and Gordon's case, Henry Lee Lucas. Henry Lee Lucas had been involving himself in murder cases to the tune of about 600 confessions since early 1983.
This man, Henry Lee Lucas, claims to have killed 360 people in 36 states over just 8 years.
It all started when police caught Lucas for killing his teenage lover, Becky, also known as Frida Powell. Lucas's close friend, Otis Toole, was Becky's uncle.
My focus is on 20th century American history, but I do lots of other things, and I am actually really interested in true crime sort of separately from my historical work, but recently they've collided because I'm going to be teaching a course at the university this fall called History of True Crime. So I've been getting really deep into the history of that.
This is Dr. Laura Sykes, a historian and assistant professor at Texas A&M University Texarkana. She did research on Lucas for her History of True Crime course and has become quite the expert on the One-Eyed Drifter. Lucas had an unstable childhood, which was fraught with emotional, physical, and sexual abuse.
Yeah, so Henry Lee Lucas was born into a family where, like you mentioned, both of his parents were sort of on the fringes of society. His dad was going in and out of prison all the time. His mom was, according to him, a prostitute. We aren't quite sure how much of what he says is true because he is maybe a liar, maybe a confabulator, but either way, the things that he says are not reliable. However, there are a series of papers that document some of the challenges he had in his early childhood. For instance, the state issued an injunction against his mother for forcing him to go to elementary school dressed as a girl when he was a boy. This was not some sort of, you know, self-expression of his. He did not want to do it, but his mother made him. And so eventually the state actually got involved. And this is in a time when the state isn't really inclined to interfere in the personal lives of ordinary people. That's sort of their hands-off approach to issues like child abuse and things like that.
Henry would also say that he was forced to watch his mother perform sexual acts on her clients and that he was also prostituted by his own mother. He killed her in 1960 when she hit him with a broom. She had been trying to make him come home back to Texas to take care of her. He described the murder as him blacking out and said he didn't realize he had a knife in his hand when he hit her in the neck.
I can actually say during 1960 when Mom died, I actually hated her so bad that the day Mom slapped me, I just wanted her dead. She's somebody that was there to beat and kick and stomp everybody she was around.
Lucas was to be imprisoned in Michigan for 40 years. During his incarceration, he attempted suicide many times. Eventually, he was transferred to the state hospital for treatment, which included electric shock, behavior therapy, and antidepressants. The facility released him in mid-1970 due to overcrowding. For all of his faults, Lucas seemed to have a decent understanding of who he was. He told police that he would kill again if they released him.
Back there in Michigan, you know, and I've told the psychiatrist what I was going to do. I've told the warden what I was going to do. I said, I don't want out there because I know what I'm going to do. And they said, oh, ain't nothing wrong with you going out there. And I get out there, and the first day I get out, I put them a body on their doorstep.
Fresh out of prison, Lucas became fast friends with Tool, and they were, for all intents and purposes, twin flames. Tool was obsessed with Lucas, in love with him, in a way. Lucas was also obsessed with Tool, but was often derisive of him.
So in some cases, we're not quite sure what Otis Tool is saying is are things that really happened to both him and Henry Lee Lucas, or if he is mimicking Henry Lee Lucas, because we know that he tends to do that throughout his career. Otis really looks up to Henry Lee Lucas, and he feels like that's sort of his it's a person that he wants to emulate. And Henry himself would say that Otis was dumb as bricks and he was just copying Lucas. And when you put them in a room together, they're going to start like rapping. You know, he's going to be like, hey, you remember that time that we raped and strangled that girl? And Otis is like, oh, yeah. And then we did this horrible thing. And then we ate a piece of her, like stuff like that. And they're just like one upping each other. And we actually have recordings of them doing this. And it's like many of these examples, impossible to believe.
In the 1980s, roughly a decade after his release, police arrested Lucas for the murders of Kate Rich in Ringgold and Becky Frieda Powell in Denton, Texas. He was isolated for a while because officers realized he enjoyed talking and couldn't stand being without conversation or companionship.
Now, Henry Lee Lucas is a person who appears to be someone who sort of had an arrested development in a lot of ways. He seems to function very very clearly on a immediate gratification system, right? And this is something that happens throughout his life. We have a lot of evidence of this. There are some reasons that might be behind that. Not only his abusive upbringing, but he was the victim of traumatic brain injury. And so we know for sure that he has problems with impulse control. So them sort of putting him on ice and then bringing him back out really primes the pump for him to talk.
When they let him out of his cell, he never really stopped talking or confessing. Lucas's case is very well documented, as are his confessions. There's an excellent Netflix documentary about his life called The Confession Killer, and a website called Henry's Map has cataloged all of his confessions, locating all the murders he claimed. For those brave enough to watch, there's also a disturbing movie, loosely based on Lucas, called Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer. He received metaphorical golden stars, almost like a kindergartner, in a way, for confessing the crimes. Police officers and state troopers would give him burgers or strawberry milkshakes. Police stations around the U.S. began calling the Lucas Hub in Georgetown, Texas, in order to close cases in quick succession. One of the more prominent cases was out of Georgetown. An unidentified woman was found deceased and nude, except for a pair of orange socks, which soon became her pseudonym. She was recently identified as Deborah Louise Jackson. Lucas took credit for her murder, and he was sentenced to death for strangling her. Even after this, Lucas would sit in a lean-back chair, smoking cigarettes, making marks on a map, often saying yes when officers called in and asked if he committed certain crimes. He would also walk around the facility, joshing around with police officers. He was often left alone in interrogation rooms with case files before official recordings began. These files contained maps, photos, and key information that no one but the killer could know. Police said that they had to show him something to help jog his recollection. It's no surprise that Lucas seemed to have a fantastic memory for details. Law enforcement also questioned Otis Toole in this manner. He would typically regurgitate what he would see as well. Occasionally, the two men were interrogated at the same time and would rebound off of each other, topping each other's grandiose statements. Then, they would be instructed to direct police to the crime scene and explain how they killed a person or disposed of a body. Lucas's confessions and supposed travels frightened people across the United States. This man had no modus operandi. He killed when he felt like it. From elderly people to small children to prostitutes to random people in need of roadside help, Henry Lee Lucas would kill anyone. Or so that's what he said.
I don't know whether it's me or whether I look trusted or what. I don't know. But they get in the car. And I go up and knock on people's doors and tell them I'm hungry, tell them I want a drink of water. They invite me right in their house. I said, come on in. Yeah, come on. Mm-hmm. Which is the worst mistake you make. I didn't want to end up being a criminal, but I ended up that way because of different things I had to do in life and trying to survive.
People were suddenly terrified that someone like Lucas could exist. Early media coverage of the Manson murders and the Ted Bundy serial killer case heightened their fears. Lucas had been on a media tour for a while, which eventually brought him to our neck of the woods. In 1984, two TAPD detectives traveled to Georgetown to interview him and decided he should be brought to the Twin Cities. Typically, where Lucas went, chaos followed, and Texarkana was no exception. Ahead of his visit, the town was in a frenzy. The Texarkana Gazette editor at the time, Bob Lutkin, blasted TAPD Captain Bob Harrison, in an editorial. Quote, "Police Captain Bob Harrison is accused in the Gazette of hampering a police investigation," Lutkin wrote. The Texarkana, Arkansas police officer thought a story by Jim Harris that quoted him as saying Henry Lee Lucas is a suspect in the gruesome murders of the Alexander children would hamper the investigation, unquote. Lutkin said that police had been searching for 3 years for the killer to no avail, and that there were countless stories published about what happened to Karen and Gordon. But back to our hampering of the investigation, Lutkin wrote in an icy tone. Lutkin said that the police chief reported his concerns to other media outlets but refused to meet with editors to discuss his qualms. The editor claimed that Harrison's reasoning was that Lucas didn't want any publicity until the investigation was over. This from a man who said he has killed more than 150 people and now he wants to avoid publicity, Lutkin wrote. The editor asked Harrison, "Is a convicted murderer going to dictate to police how to conduct their investigation and when to release information about it?" Lutkin implied that Harrison was cooperating more with Lucas than law-abiding reporters. Harrison would go on to become the department's longtime chief. Henry Lee Lucas was in Texarkana on Thursday, April 26, 1984, and was questioned about the Alexander murders. There are rumors about Lucas's time in Texarkana. People say police drove him to the house where the murders occurred and took him to Sue and Carol's kitchen for his Gold Star meal. "I recently visited the diner for lunch and found it packed to the brim with people of all different sorts. I went to the counter to order, managed to find a table, and wiped it down myself to guarantee my seat. The food was delicious. A home-cooked Southern-style comfort meal with crispy fries and onion rings that crunched just right. I could see why TAPD picked here for Henry Lee Lucas to eat. Plus, it was close to the house where Karen and Gordon were killed." Dallas Times-Herald reporters Hugh Ainsworth and Jim Henderson worked studiously to track down evidence of Henry Lee Lucas's whereabouts when he said he committed the murders.
I have a wonderful quote here from the Pulaski County prosecutor at the time that he said, I don't know where exactly it is, but he said, if he could have, he would have confessed to the Lindbergh baby murder. Of course, the Lindbergh baby was killed in 1930.
Let the record show that Henry Lee Lucas was born in 1936. All in all, the journalist found a considerable amount of evidence in the form of receipts, pay slips, and witness accounts of Lucas being in different places, even different states, at the times he said he committed certain crimes. When Henry Lee Lucas confessed to killing Karen and Gordon, he failed to mention that he was actually in Florida during the time of the murders. Not only that, but he claimed to commit the murder of Thelma Lopez, age 25, in Baytown, Texas, in the evening of the same day. Lucas had been in Jacksonville, Florida, as late as April 6, 1981, as were his accomplices, Otis Toole and Frida and Frank Powell. Toole had been working, the Powells were in school, and Lucas had signed a receipt for $70 in food stamps. In order for Lucas, the Powells, and Toole to have been the killers, as he claimed, he and his four friends would have had to travel across the United States at an impossible speed without bathroom or eating breaks. Looking at the string of murders he claimed to commit in chronological order, it's very difficult to imagine the logistics of how he could have done them all. For Lucas to get to Baytown from Texarkana, it would have been a 5-hour drive. So it is possible that he made this drive, but with evidence of the Powells and Toole being in Florida and with them being all so attached to each other, I'm inclined to think otherwise, especially since Lucas said the four worked together to commit the crimes. The ripples of pain that Lucas's false confessions have caused cannot be measured. They are vast and stretch past the people who have suffered loss and injustice. His lies have impacted the justice system and have kept crimes from being properly solved. Last year, I met a man who interviewed Lucas in Georgetown. He intimidated me quite a bit. He said that, beyond the shadow of a doubt, he knew Lucas had killed the Alexanders because of the evil he was capable of, what he saw in Lucas's eyes. I think differently. I think at this point, given Lucas's lack of credibility, it is erroneous and irresponsible to even continue to consider that he killed Karen and Gordon. I'll even call it what it is. Impossible.
If you know of any information regarding the Alexander murders, call retired police captain Calvin Seward at 903-826-4702 or email him at the address in the show notes. No detail is too small, and it may just lead to closure in this case. The story will continue in future episodes of True Crime Texarkana. True Crime Texarkana is a Texarkana Gazette podcast created in Star Bear Studio, right here in downtown Texarkana, USA. Mallory Wyatt reported and wrote the show. Carl Richter produced, edited, and contributed vocals. Chris Finley composed the main theme music. To support the show, leave a 5-star review wherever you listen.